Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor. FM to get started.
Happy Halloween, kitties. Welcome back to this week's Rooster Teeth Reviews. We are taking a special look in accordance with the holiday. We are taking a look at Rooster Teeth's second feature film, or third feature film, Bloodfest. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, boys and ghouls.
You went for it. You shot for the moon.
The Crypt Keeper is one of the few people who gets a pass in my book when it comes to puns. He can make all the stupid puns he wants.
I thought you were going to say he was on your list. Anyway, that's for one.
Anyway, hey there, boys and girls. We are here. Happy Halloween, first and foremost. We are here we're going to be talking about Bloodfest tonight. I'm really excited. Let's not waste any time. Let me introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
I cringed this entire movie.
To his left, Stacey Shuttleworth.
Hello.
To her left, Katie Cullen.
I'm just enjoying the music.
And I'm Megan Salinas. Guys, I am so excited to talk about this movie tonight. Rooster Teeth, Del, when they first made the announcement at RTX that they were going to be doing a horror comedy, I was over the moon. And guys, then at last RTX, we got to see it. So guys, let's talk about it again in celebration of the holiday.
I feel like we need to do a little bit of housekeeping before we get started.
Okay.
Okay. If you haven't already done so, please go to iTunes, rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you. It's the best way to let our producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. And we know we have an international audience. If you guys go ahead and take a screen cap of your iTunes review, put it in the hashtag RTReviews, we will go ahead and give you guys a shout out. We don't have any new ones this week, but we will go ahead and give you guys a shout out. So there's one bit of housekeeping.
The other bit of housekeeping we're going to do is we want to remind you that we produce after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows. For dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more, there's no network that does more or works harder for television fans. But we need your help. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our YouTube channels. By subscribing to these channels, YouTube will suggest content that is tailor-made for you, and you'll help AfterBuzz continue to grow. So if you're worried about those pesky notifications, they're optional. You don't have to worry about them. We appreciate it because it lets you know exactly the moment that we go live on this network, but they are optional, so please hit subscribe right now for AfterBuzz TV Animation, and make sure to check out all of other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. What's Z Nation on?
Z Nation is on Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi. Make sure to check out Pro Wrestling and Sports. I'm on some of those the shows featured there. Let us know you did so in the comments. We'll shout you on air. But for now, thanks for being the best fans and for making us the ESPN of TV talk.
And in case you guys didn't know, this is a spoiler review. We are not holding back when it comes to spoilers. We're not necessarily doing a beat-by-beat recap of the entire plot.
We don't have the time.
But we are talking spoilers. So if you haven't watched the movie yet, go out. It's available on release. Go
digital,
out, watch it.
Digital, physical. I think it's at Walmart.
Yeah.
And other locations.
Yeah, there are places you can get it. Go watch the movie. It's a lot of great Halloween fun. And then come back here for your review.
And also, don't talk about Ruby yet because it's still under sponsor. And we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, we'll be
That's
talking
when
about,
that starts.
We'll be talking about Ruby soon. We want to hear your guys' thoughts on the movie itself, so go ahead and put your thoughts in the hashtag RTReviews.
And down below.
Yeah, below in the comment section. All right, guys. Initial thoughts on the film. Mark, you said that you cringed the entire time.
Yeah, because I don't like horror movies.
So that kind of.
Yeah. There were a couple of things that I was like, okay, this is a little bit too tropey for me, even from what little, even just as films, like I don't like how, and I haven't seen Laser Team 2, but how this is the second Rooster Teeth film that I've seen where we have another dumb blonde female character, and I think by giving her the scene near the end with Krill to sort of be like, oh my, like self-realization, that doesn't make it better.
Her sleeping with a good guy should be her character arc.
And playing into the various tropes and quote rules, like horror movie rules of various things. You could, like, if this was supposed to be a trope breaker and we're following the rules by breaking them or this, that, the other thing, there, that could have been something else. But in saying that, if you want to get me invested in a set of characters, you play with our actors. And if you start this movie by killing Sam Ireland, I'm going to be very invested.
As soon as that happened, I was like, oh, Mark is not going to like me. So
I will say, that small scene that she was involved in, you could see her influence continuously throughout the rest of the movie on her family and how that played out. And it was, and I like how they gave the RT audience enough of sort of everybody.
Yeah.
And where it wasn't like movie breaking. It wasn't overbearing with references and cameos, but it was like, oh, there's this person, there's that person, even though Adam got a very big role in the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed it ultimately.
Stacey.
So Cabin in the Woods is one of my favorite movies.
Yes.
So this kind of hit all of those same buttons in playing with the tropes, especially with the whole mechanical side of things, like the technical aspects of it. Going into depth with that was a lot of fun. And overall, I think the whole movie was a lot of fun in a very... I'm all about the tropes. So like, if you want to go ham on the tropes like they do in this, that works, especially when they're kind of turning them over. The one like hesitation I had early on in this movie is when they started kind of playing with the mental illness causes people to become killers trope, and that was a let's hope this subverts in
it's like, you better ride that line very carefully. Katie.
Yeah.
And then they didn't.
I think we need to have a discussion about that later on, especially with the how did you make the monsters bit, because I think there's a bit to be unpacked there.
Mm-hmm.
But I keep prefacing all of these with I'm not really a horror person, and I think I need to stop saying that, and that's mostly your fault, Megan.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Horror movies give you an accent.
Exactly.
I do declare.
Anyway, I did enjoy this, and we watched it at RTX. We were actually watching it night of, and then you had an interview the next day, so it was, all right, let's do it, let's go, let's have some fun. I enjoyed it a lot. There were definitely parts of it that were weaker than others. The reveal of Red, for one. Like, actually, they've been this person the whole time. It's like, I forgot he had a sister. That's not good. That's not a good ghost-faced killer reveal. That's not... It definitely had some issues just in its execution. But overall, it was a fun romp, if you will. I had a good time. Your fault!
I'm not sorry.
I know you're not.
So, as we all have heard time and time again on various RT review panels, I'm a big horror movie fan, so I was over the moon when they made this announcement. Getting to watch the movie, I was actually a little hesitant because the reviews were pretty mixed after it premiered at South by Southwest. So I was like, okay, don't get your hopes up. Like, this could be a mixed bag. All in all, I have to agree with you guys. I had a good time. I certainly have my nerdy horror movie nitpicks, and we're going to be digging into those tonight.
I have some notes.
We do indeed. So first and foremost, I wanted to ask, do these types of horror attractions, are they something that resonate with you guys? Because, Mark, you do a podcast all about going to theme parks and talking theme park stories.
Thank you for the plug. I did an episode 2 weeks ago with a real good friend of mine, AfterBuzz TV folks may know him, Ty Matthews. He does the Purge After Show here in Lucha Underground. He is a haunt king. And I sort of broke down where that started with him, and we talked a little bit about it. I realize this, so I stay as far away from it as possible. I'm very punchy and itchy, and I've got a really long reach. So tight corridors with people that are at fist height, not a great idea. So I if And Universal offered it this year, and I hope they continue to. They offer a lights-on tour of the Stranger Things maze.
Oh.
It's only for this last week of Horror Nights, but if you go during the day, you can go check out the maze without having to deal with any of the monsters or demogorgons or things of that nature.
The jump scares are
they're turned off. Absolutely off. But it's just, hey, check out this recreation of this world that you like from this Netflix show. And so I love the idea. I love the performance aspect because I had a lot of friends in theater back in college that loved it. So I love the idea, the concept, the technological implications that these pop-up attractions have to have. However, I know physically and emotionally, I can't put myself in that situation, or someone's going to get hurt, and it's not me.
So you would not have bought a ticket to Bloodfest?
Oh, hell no. I wouldn't think anything of anybody who did, but oh, God, no. God, no.
Stacey, would you have signed up?
Well, last night I was at the LA Haunted Hayride, so yeah. Although Bloodfest does seem a lot more intense, so I'd probably side-eye it for a while and have to find a really good group of friends
to go year one, maybe three or four.
Yeah. See how that shakes out, especially now that movies like this are out there.
Yeah, you're like, okay, well, year one will be a beta for everyone, and I'll go the following year. And then you live through that horror movie. Yeah. You wake up the next morning, oh, I made the right decision. Thank you, Pat Stacey.
Katie, do these types of horror attractions appeal to you in any way?
So The Walking Dead is a permanent attraction at Universal. And the last time I went with this human and her family, they were like, let's go to The Walking Dead. It's a tiny little mini maze. Let's go. And I got through the entrance, and I got halfway through the first hallway, which was a blood-covered hospital corridor. Hadn't even seen any zombies yet. And I had this nice little moment of...
line. There was no line! It was a weekday in December.
I had this moment of, do I really want to do this? No. No, I don't. And so I let him know I was leaving, and I turned around and went back to the entrance and waited with the three other people who were waiting for their friends to come out of the maze. So, no. That is a hard no.
I would have bought a ticket and I would have died. So that's the long and short.
I think you possibly could have figured out the rules and made it somewhat to the end.
Look, the only way to survive this movie was nepotism. So unless her parents were running this, probably not.
You bring up an excellent point. They make a big show about if you obey the rules, you can survive the night. Mm-hmm. However, that is a lie. And also,
like, as soon as I said that, I remembered, oh, that other scene where he was like, nope.
It was a lie so that he could get better performances out of all of his victims. Mm-hmm. However, as you were talking about in terms of tropes, horror's changed a lot in the last 20 years in the wake of films like Scream, Behind the Mask, and Cabin in the Woods. Did Bloodfest make an accurate assessment of the rules, or is that assessment sadly antiquated?
I'm kind of loving Don't Be Alone with a Doll as one of the rules, like, all right,
that's a solid rule. I don't think that one's ever going to go away.
Like, oh, there's
dolls
doll.
And clowns. Bye, just hard pass. Mm-hmm.
Clown dolls.
Oh, no.
Let's just hard pass on that.
No time for a haunted doll watch here. I think that in presenting a situation where there are rules, these are the rules, and then sort of there are a lot of times where they're acting in defiance of them, I think it did a little bit of a disservice to the movie and to the concept. Like, early on, it's like, no, don't separate. And then by the time we get to the saw part, we separate. And and usually there are instant ramifications, and then you like the shower trope as well. Maybe go, oh, she's about to die.
Yeah.
And it did subvert it a little bit, but then by focusing on, no, we have to follow the rules, and then when they don't follow the rules, nothing happens. It was a little bit of a shortcoming for me.
Stacey?
I think that the classic rules of horror are so ingrained now, and they're so... they may be a little outdated, especially when we talk about all of like the technological advancements that we have, which a lot of horror movies just tend to just completely ignore or somehow shove out of the way. But I think that's part of the fun of the genre and part of the enjoyment of it is that you do have these set rules that will never really go out of style. Mm-hmm.
I would say that the rule for the most part that is starting to go out of style and that most people only really lip service to is the whole sluts die, virgins live bit. Like, that... we, Scream 4, definitely got that with Scream 4 and saying, yeah, no, that's no longer a rule. The only rule is this. And then they threw that out as well. So I think there are a few things that are still pretty good rule. Like, don't split up. Always, always a good one. And I'd say that's rule number one. But just the ones that are more unique to 80s slashers more than anything else, especially the sex thing, yeah, those are outdated.
And I don't know how, just because I haven't seen any of them, I don't know how it feels in the Saw movies. Has anybody seen the Saw movies?
Yes, I've seen one and two.
Okay.
And then I called it after that.
It was a bad decision.
So that was one of my issues when it came to tropes and rules and things of that puzzle that they had to solve is I figured it out immediately.
Yeah.
And not even to the point where somebody has to sacrifice themselves.
You have two people in the room and they just go, boom.
Exactly. Both people touch the buttons and then even then you have some freedom to move. So in terms of figuring out the solution before, if at all, the characters do, pulled me out immediately. Of just like, he didn't have to die. You wasted a whole bunch of time and somebody's life and a horror icon's life. Because, I mean, then again, like, we're not in the situation, blah, blah, blah. But, either way, that pulled me out.
That you do make bad decisions when you're panicking. And, honestly, it was a good moment. Like, a good moment for the character. I'm completely with you there. I think the results worked out okay. But I think the process was kind of like, okay, really? Really? Mm-hmm. And then torture porn has no rules. It just doesn't.
And that was the thing. As I was having that thought, I was like, yeah, then they could make up something where it's like, no, that's not how the game works, and then killed everybody, blah, blah, blah.
My least favorite thing about Jigsaw is that a lot of times people who take on the mantle, they purposely make traps that people can't get out of, and it's like, well, at least OG Jigsaw usually gave people a fighting chance. Usually. He was also kind of a dick. Anyway.
He was a murderer. And everyone who says that he wasn't needs to stop.
You bring up an excellent point, too, talking about, like, the way sort of these characters look at horror and the rest of the genre. Because, like, the director, Owen Edgerton, is in this movie as our lovely ringmaster. And I think for all of this film's flaws, his passion for horror is what shines through the most. His love of all the genres is what shines through. But his character sort of makes an assessment before all of the hell breaks loose, so to speak. And he claims that horror has gotten dull. That our icons are old and tired. And, you know, we say this at the 40th anniversary of Halloween, which came out, which I also very much loved. But, like, you know, Freddy's on lunchboxes and things like that.
Our vampires sparkle. Our zombies are daytime soap opera stars.
Over-commodification has made the what we used to be afraid of, mundane. Do you guys agree with that assessment?
Yes.
I do, and I think especially in today's world.
I'd say it's not just the horror genre. I'd say it's Hollywood, because we are stuck in the world of reboots, requels, and remakes. And again, we have a new Halloween movie coming out, and you saw it and you said it was great, and that's great. They're not always great, but then you get things like Your Next and The Babadook and these indie horror movies or horror movies that aren't about your basic slashers or the same monsters that we've seen all the time. And even if they're not the best thing you've ever seen in your life, they're creative and oftentimes they are very scary. So it's less the horror genre is dead and more Hollywood needs to take a few more risks, damn it.
It's more of a societal thing. Like, a lot of the big fads, horror fads that came along came with various fears. Cracked used to do a series called After Hours. They had a couple of really good shorts that talked about what is the scariest thing, blah, blah, blah. But it takes how we're feeling collectively as a society to be genuinely afraid of something. And it's not necessarily just it can't just be the same retread over and over. Even the first Halloween remake that Rob Zombie did, it took a deeper look at Michael and why, as opposed to just the what. And then this new Halloween is a direct reflection of how we're feeling as a society today, which makes that additionally scary. So if people are just making, we need a killer, we need a unique weapon, maybe put it in 3D and some nudity. And that's, we got a horror movie, folks, but no, they're like more of the societal-based stuff tends to hit harder.
Interesting that you bring that up, because in the original, there was no reason. And that, you know, 40 years later, they fall back on that. After 3 decades of trying to explain why, we fall back on, like, there is no reason. And that's the scariest thing of all. So it's like time moves, you know, time is cyclical. Mm. You know, what was once scary is now scary again.
I mean, they once tried to explain Michael with a cult. So it's kind of hard to get worse than that.
This isn't a review of Halloween, but it is interesting in terms of the meta-narrative reflection. I do want to know, guys, which area, if you were trapped in Bloodfest, which area would you avoid at all costs?
Clown Town.
Nope! I would definitely be in the Arborist area with a group of people, because you stick together in a slasher movie, you have better odds because there's only one of them.
And there are a lot of rooms in that high school. Yeah. Just pick the right one.
At first, I definitely thought it was going to be the doll theater. Horrifying. But then they brought in nuns and any of that Catholic nuns. And like, I know better than that. I know better than to mess
Catholic
with
nonsense. That Catholic nonsense. I love it.
I was raised with that. I'm not messing with it.
No. I know how all of this goes. I'm not ordained. I can't bless any of this water. We're all screwed.
I am a lapsed Catholic. I'm getting out of here.
No.
I'm going somewhere where being a virgin counts.
So
vampires, I guess.
Apparently.
So sort of worked for Krill.
It was until, and again, the virgin rule is so outdated, and here it's very much a rule, capital R rule, so we have to capital F follow it, and then when it's no longer a rule, now we can kill you. Like, it's fun that they're lampshading it like that, but in terms of it actually working in non-parody is not the right word, please help me.
Satire?
Thank you. In terms of it working in non-satires nowadays... Yeah.
I thought that was a fun subversion, though, because it wasn't, hey, you can't kill me, I'm a virgin. It was just him not being able to talk to a woman. Yeah. And that event, and he didn't
really
even
nice.
Figure out the vampire part until the very end. And that's what made me like that scene so much.
I did like that initial encounter. I thought that was well played. Just him being completely clueless.
Like, and really Blaine pretty. In the background being like stereotypical shock. I loved it.
Blaine like literally, Blaine. Those guys are getting eaten to death and he's like, you're really pretty, but like I have like a thing. I'm really sorry.
I have to catch up with my friends. I'm so sorry.
She's just kind of like...
Bye!
Yeah, okay.
It was a very good scene.
I think it was super cute. Just, you can come with us if you want. Oh, my sweet so child. For me, the one area I would avoid at all costs is definitely Tortureville. When OG Saw came out, I was afraid for like probably a solid week that Jigsaw was going to hide out in the bed of my truck and kidnap me and put me in a death trap.
Didn't you meet him in a coffee shop?
One time I was in Malibu picking up a gift card for the radio station at for our school, because we had guests coming in for one of the shows, so I was getting them a gift card as like a thank you for coming in, and the person standing in line in front of me was an older gentleman, and I looked at him at the corner of my eye. I was like, he looks familiar. And then, like, I realized when he got up to the front, he put his sunglasses down as he was making his order. And I was like, it's Jigsaw. And then I spent the rest of my time in that coffee shop just holding onto my bag and going, don't make eye contact with Tobin Bell. Don't make eye contact with Tobin Bell.
And we have him here, Tobin.
Running.
There's only one exit. By all accounts, he seems like a very nice man. I'm good. I would feel terrible because I'd be like, oh, you're so nice. You terrify me. It's okay.
Well, that's how we know he's done his job.
That's better than going, say the line, say the line. Like, yeah, when Dax like went up to the arborist character, I was just like, oh, I love you. And just being in this town for as long as I have like that, and being that guy before, you don't do that.
I did to all of us just kind of inwardly, oh, no.
This is a message to the fandom.
Kind of on that note, the arborist stuff was actually probably my favorite because maybe it's just because, you know, there is an 80s slasher movie that just came, you know, a revival that just came out. And Freddy's one of my favorites and everything like that. So the arborist storyline is what really resonated with me. How did you guys feel about that particular plot line?
Oh, I enjoyed it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a ridiculous slasher premise. It's fun.
I think that the setup with all of that could be more of a hint at Dax's future, and if we do get a sequel, what he'll be up to. But I
did.
the scene where he directed Roger, it's like, oh, you know this stuff really well. We could pick up 5 years later, and he's a big horror movie director, blah blah. Or he remade the Arborist franchise similarly to Halloween. But I couldn't help but. I wasn't thinking classic 80s slasher. I just couldn't get the Toxic Avenger out of my head for some reason. So I was thinking it was more of like a Toxie thing. And I did take it serious because that's how they were presenting it. But I could imagine Adam spouting babble like Toxie does.
I was going to say, could you imagine Adam being the Toxic Avenger?
Sure, yeah. If they just talk to, what's his name? I see him in the... I forget his name, the creator. But I could see him doing that. But I enjoyed it, but I couldn't. Toxie was just in the back of my head. I couldn't help it.
Well, I just love the moment about, like, well, when you drowned him in sap, oh, yeah, well, I was thinking this and this and the whole, you do know more about these movies than you let on.
Stacey?
Yeah, this was one of my favorite parts, and I think we got that kind of meaty storyline part here that satisfies all those.
Yeah. Also, Zachary Levi.
Beautifully Ryder!
As himself!
I really enjoyed the parallel of him geeking out about meeting the arborist and making a complete fool of himself. And then you fast forward a little bit into the movie, and we get to see Ashley in that exact same situation.
As he's describing, like, this horrifying the woman experience.
I never got to tell her that I loved her.
Just wonderful juxtaposition right there.
And you bring up a good point with Ashley, and I didn't put the two together, but that brought something up to me. They implied that Dax and Ashley had some sort of a relationship, some sort of past relationship, sort of nothing.
Like, because he was able to call on her to get him into the...
There was a connection there, but we didn't really see it, especially once... Lenjamin came into the thing and Krill started talking to her a lot. So it was like, oh, there's a possibility to show more of that relationship and why ultimately she trusted him in this excursion. But
yeah, it seems like a little bit of a missed opportunity. Yeah. I'm wondering if there wasn't a deleted scene somewhere.
Or several.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. I would actually really get a kick out of the deleted scenes. For sure.
Buy your Blu-rays at Walmart.
Yeah, pretty much.
So that the arbor stuff was my favorite part. I want to go around the table. What was your guys' favorite part of this film?
I really enjoyed that bit where they're just discussing the arborist and discussing the sap kill. And bonding. I like bonding moments. I also really enjoyed the scene where they just set everything off, the opening ceremonies, if you would, with that teetering, like, okay, are they really going to kill them? Are they really going to? Oh, we're doing this. Yep. Oh, we're committed. And then going into the explanation of the rules up in the control booth. Like, that 10-minute chunk, I just loved. That and the explanation. Like, I loved most of the stuff in the control booth, honestly. It was just a good time.
They were a fun bunch.
Oh, yeah. Bunch of sociopaths. They were great.
Yes. Finding out the zombies were controlled by gamers.
Yes.
Excellent.
I felt bad for the gamers, though, because they were not in on this. No. They thought it was a game.
Yeah, and just the way they were like clearly using these games. Like, oh, come test out our new, like, cool game.
We need beta testers.
Surprise.
And then they just kill them all. Like,
I love that line. Like, when do we get to play the victims? Soon!
Yep. Oh, don't ask that question.
No.
Ah, I just got that.
Yep. Yep.
Clever girl. For me, it was anything in the control room, just because Owen, anytime he was on screen, was the most... I was doing a couple of things at the time when I was watching, and I just had to stop and look at him. And even just the couple of characters that we get in the control room that are part of the team, where it's one person that's like, oh, it's my job. Like, bubbly. Oh, this is favorite part of the job. And the person's like, how many people are dying? Everybody's dying. That was a fun team, and I knew that window was going to get used for something. Like, you can't put a beautiful stained glass window and not have anything go through it.
And that little budding romance between two of them that ended so horribly.
Deliciously.
Yeah.
And a good portion of this movie is about facing your fears. And what's Dax afraid of? Ultimately, he's afraid of his father and having to stand up to his father, who ends up being the main antagonist. Now, I wanted to ask, is, in your guys' opinion, is making Dax's father and sister, you know, the primary antagonist, is that a shortcoming of the film? Because when it comes to his dad being the mastermind, I thought it was a little predictable. The second they mentioned mental patients, I was like, it's the dad.
The second that Red did a front flip off of the stage, I went, oh, it's his sister. Because what little we saw of her was that she was athletic.
She's very nimble.
And I was like, oh, that's because there's no one else that would be. But we get so little with her that I don't think, I think keeping her around for another movie is helpful, because we get to find out more about her and why, ultimately, more so than just, I just wanted to be a killer because it you know, identify with
I feel nothing.
Yeah.
She's kind of a non-entity. Like I said, they did the reveal and I'm like, oh yeah, he had a sister. Like,
so I think, but by keeping her alive and not just killing her off, gives her more of a place to go and more of a reason to possibly look back at this first one and be like, oh yeah, okay, I see now.
Sequel hook.
Stacey,
I think so. I didn't start picking up until they started talking about the mental patients. I was like, oh, interesting. Yeah. And then, you know, at the interview when he got kind of visibly upset and rushed off, I was like, oh, wait a second.
It's like he went out of his way to make sure his son wasn't going to Hellfest. They mentioned that he had that the master, you know, the ringmaster has a partner. They mentioned mental patients. He's leaving the interview.
Yeah. there's something big going on there.
But honestly, I don't think it was meant to be that big of a twist. I mean, the clues were all there, and I feel like they expected us to put them together. Like, it wasn't too much of a reach for Dad's involvement. And again, the only reason the sister was a surprise was because I forgot she existed, which is a shortcoming of the movie, because we don't have a lot of women in this movie. And one of them just being completely as a character was a little disappointing. But yeah,
I think if I were to pick one thing to be the biggest shortcoming, it would be Red's lack of presence, particularly because of our opening sequence. Samantha Ireland is killed by a man in a mask, and it's very seeing that a person in a very similar mask had a very deep effect on Dax. Like, you
and
tell,
it never came
right?
back,
and it never came back up until the mask came off. And it's like that. I feel like we should have had Red sprinkled throughout chasing this group, not because she's trying to kill Dax, but because she's trying to get him out of there.
Mm-hmm. That would have made a lot more sense, especially if we'd had a scene where, say, Red had the opportunity to kill him and didn't.
And yeah, let them.
And then you
slip
get
away.
That moment of, wait a minute.
Or, you know, accidentally chucked a weapon and knocked open a secret passage for them to slip through. Yeah, something a little more hints along that way.
Yeah, because it's like, here's Red. You'll see them in an hour.
Cool. You might remember them by then.
They'll be the scariest thing. The face of your new nightmares. They'll be the scariest thing that you, 45 minutes later, oh, yeah, they exist.
You.
Cool. They're back.
Also, how much wire does that knife hold in the handle? Because she rappelled a really long distance.
It was a tall tower.
Just in general, calling something a tower implies a certain amount of height. She chucked it across the room and then rappelled down. Terrifying.
I'd say probably wire, like, on a harness in the ribs, connected to the white knife.
The preparedness is the true terror. She's
ready
just
for
ready.
Anything. Well, we saw her using it as a long-range weapon earlier in the movie.
There It's really long, though.
I really like the idea of her going, "Happy Halloween, Big Brother," rappelling down and only getting down halfway down the tower.
Or like
this is awkward.
Snapping up, fuck.
Oh, crap.
That was the secret ending.
So this film had a lot of nods, obviously, to various tropes and to, as you mentioned earlier, to Rooster Teeth. It doesn't detract from the film, but it adds something if you are a Rooster Teeth fan. What was your favorite nod to Rooster Teeth fans?
Blaine. Just Blaine. Blaine being Blaine being Blaine being Blaine. Like, yeah.
Stacey?
That was mine, too. That was an excellent scene.
It was the I Burn being Ashley's ringtone. And the part in the credit was like, I Burn, provided by, I was like, it's your own production company, whatever. But in the credits listing, Gavin is listed as himself.
Yep.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So Gavin was bisected?
Yeah, so Gavin was bisected.
In
so
slow motion.
Yeah.
So it was I Burn, and then it was Gavin being himself and being dead.
For me, it was Owen calling the gamers cockbites. And I was just like,
that was good.
Okay, that's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
Deep pulls.
Deep pull putting Josh Ornelas in front of a game system. That's pretty deep.
For sure. So one of the elements of this movie was definitely vampires, and I want to talk about that a little bit because as you mentioned, Stacey, the film sort of rides this kind of problematic line when it comes to talking about mental illness. And one of the things that it does in terms of creating vampires is like, oh, human trafficking. Cool, 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 guys. Cool, cool, cool.
Awesome, awesome. Well done.
This is the point where the suspension of disbelief is good for a good number of things. But there's a point where you step back and you think of the logistics of how ridiculously big this park is. And then all of these psychological patients who presumably at least some of them had families, had people who were checking in, had welfare agents, had people who cared about them. And suddenly it's, well, sorry, they're gone. Are these deaths covered up? How much paperwork is there? How did they get all these gamers? Was that through Craigslist? How did they? And just the scale of this operation. And then what happens to the people who come to the job interviews to be, like, in the tower and whatnot and don't make it? Are they assassinated? Is it one of those jobs where you don't get to know what it is until you say yes? Like, not everyone's going to be down for helping in a mass murder. So that's kind of the point where, how did none of this ever get out? Even as an internet leak, even as a Reddit thread, how did the actual purpose of this murder park never get out into the public? How were there no leaks or no concern about murders or missing mental patients who all have a connection to this one particular doctor? Like, there's a little too much convenience stacking up if you stop and think about it, but the movie doesn't really give you enough time to stop and think about it. This is a fridge logic situation. So, yeah.
Yeah, you power through all of that stuff.
I did!
No, but like the movie powers through all of that. Although now I'm imagining like specific hires of theirs like going on Reddit and going on all these websites and starting ridiculous rumors and then making them sound so far-fetched and silly that no one puts any weight behind it.
Oh my god. Guys, it's really secretly a murder park. I have this cousin who had this uncle who totally...
Oh yeah, no, I can just imagine these ridiculous threads going on.
Oh my god.
To offset that.
Yes.
Mark?
I mean, they kind of nailed it on the head.
y'all nailed it. I always get a little uncomfortable when a movie falls back on mental illness, particularly horror, because it's not great at talking about media in general is not great at addressing mental illness, but hopefully we're getting better. And this is not the movie. I don't want to necessarily also put the onus on the movie to be like, you need to do better. But at the same time, it's like, if you're going to go there,
I think they needed to do a better job of explaining how much the gamers controlled. Because looking back, it seemed like they only controlled the zombies. But if they had explained to where they had control of various monsters, and so that it's still not okay, that the doctor betrayed all of his patients' trusts to get them out and then suited up of, this is going to help you, that makes him a much more sinister character. But then the meta commentary of talking about mental illness in movies like that is rough.
Yeah. I will say, to the movie's defense, that line about it wasn't that we took mentally ill people and they were already inclined to kill people. It was we took people who were already having trouble and we specifically manipulated that weakness and tortured them and exacerbated it and broke them and molded them into what we wanted them to be. So it wasn't necessarily mental illness makes you evil. It was we took people who were already having trouble and we specifically targeted them to make it worse.
We are the villains.
Yes.
Right. I think.
Go ahead.
I think that framing really did help, especially with the whole, you know, this was a betrayal of trust on their part. These were people who went and opened up to somebody else and put that, like, allowed them to have that trust and then had it completely turned around on them.
Yeah. And, you know, kidnapping and torture and things that would otherwise be war crimes, you know, all because one of the doctor's initial patients did do a murder. Like, just because one person did it doesn't mean everyone else is going to.
Yeah. I do appreciate the crux of his argument of, like, does horror beget horror? And I actually asked that in our interview that you guys can watch on the AfterBuzz Animation channel. Check out what the cast and crew had to say about that. But yeah, we are getting down to sort of the wire on our review. And so this is a horror comedy. And horror comedies are typically, in my opinion, a little bit more accessible to non-horror fans. So would you recommend this both to horror and to non-horror fans?
I think it's easier to recommend to Rooster Teeth fans because there is a little bit of familiarity. I think it's a little bit more horror B-movie than horror comedy. Horror with some humor elements than being an outright, like, gutbuster. Yeah, horror joke. But thank you. But
gotcha.
I would say it. Yeah, I'd say it's a bit more approachable through that lens. But even so, there's a lot more heart to this, and sometimes the stuff can be so silly that you can take a moment and not necessarily be terrified.
I think it depends for non-horror fans why they're not horror fans. If it's because of gore, then no. Like, so, but like if it's just because they don't like being creeped out, then this would be fine. But yeah, I think horror fans would have a fun time with this overall.
That's pretty much my exact reasoning for non-horror fans. Is like, if the gore is the no, then you don't want to be in this one at all. But yeah, if you're just not into being super scared, well, think about it this way. Would you ever put yourself in a horror theme park? No? Then you will avoid this situation entirely. Go ahead and watch the movie. It doesn't apply to your life. For horror fans, it would definitely be, like, it's fun. It's turn your brain off fun. Do not expect it to be a tour de force. It's not going to be. Just have a good time.
Yeah, I know a couple horror snobs.
You don't say.
I know a couple horror snobs, and I'm like, this probably isn't for you. But if you're willing to sort of roll with it, it's a good time. I had a good time. And yeah, I hope everybody else did too. Final question to the panel. What would you like to see if we were to get a sequel? Mark?
I kind of already said it with Dax being a director, but I wonder where Owen would come in, where... Looking up his sister's name, Jamie, would come in, but I think it's also difficult because a lot, like, his best, their best friend died.
Yeah.
Like, they kind of went, we survived. I was like, we're not talking about Krill at all? It was very weird, but I think Dax is going to be some sort of a director, and there might be, like, a copycat that comes back, and it's not Red, blah, 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 but yeah.
I think if they did a sequel, I'd want to see them lean into Red and kind of give us a little bit more of why that happened and how that developed.
I would love to see 1 year later or 2 years later or whatever, an appropriate amount of time, someone tries to do a copycat theme park or someone tries to make a movie about it, because let's be real, things like this happen and we make movies about them. They want Dax involved somehow. He's still having trouble. Part of it is all of this horror stuff really happening, or is Dax having PTSD? Is he having trouble dealing with things? He's seeing Red. We don't know if they're actually there or if it's just him. Like, I would love a little bit of how much of this is in his head and being exacerbated by the fact that this park has been his trauma has been recreated around him. How much of it's actually happening? Like, I want to lean a little more on the psychological slasher side of things.
I'm going to bogart from a couple of yours. I like the idea of Dax directing a movie about his life experience at Bloodfest.
Hmm.
he gets to tell his own story. I like that idea. All right. And of course, things go wrong. Well, I think that just about does it for us tonight. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can follow me all over the social medias as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet, that is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you like reaction videos to Rooster Teeth properties, they live on that YouTube channel. And I also do an Overwatch podcast called On the Point.
Stacey.
I'm Stacey Shuttles. You can find me all over the web at Stacey Shuttles or over on Twitch at InventoryFullPT, where we play various games throughout the week.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be streaming some Amity Arena because I can't stop. So make sure to head over to twitch.tv/InventoryFullPT. Follow me on Twitter at MarkPDonica. Make sure to check out my, if you want to listen to the Parks podcast that I mentioned earlier, it's called Party of Two, a Parks podcast that's on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and YouTube. We upload to YouTube as well. So make sure to check that out. Yesterday, my wife and I talked about the end of Halloween season, a little bit of Dia de los Muertos, and going into Christmas,
ooh,
which is already here.
Yeah. I know. They've already taken down the Halloween billboards and are putting up Grinch billboards. And I'm like, no.
The snow's been on the castle for like 2 weeks.
Anyway, I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. Be sure to follow the whole team at The Rooster Team on Twitter. Check out the TeePublic store. And I do a podcast called No Love Lost, which is a Lost retrospective podcast. Thank you guys so much for watching. Happy Halloween, everybody. We will see you all next week.
Don't kill anybody.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.